recording.
Okay. This is the June 1st, 2017 meeting of the Leon County Research and Development Authority Board of Governors. We have guests today. Mary Jo Spector is here. Other than that, our usuals, our general counsel, our property manager.
Staff, always staff,
who are not guests. So any modifications to the agenda?
None for me.
Move approval.
Second.
Any public comment before we get into this? No? Dave, would you move in approval of draft minutes?
I'd like to do that as well.
That was good.
I thought you needed approval for the agenda, but that's fine.
Okay. Anybody have anything on the draft minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Anything that needs to be removed from the consent agenda? Okay. Hearing nothing? Now, this is the part I always think we don't have to vote, but you prefer to vote.
There's consent.
Okay.
I got to have a vote on.
All right. Second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I'm not trying to cut anybody off, but we've got stuff we really need to talk about today. Kristen and some of us are trying to do this thing that Congress has done. So, but if you have anything, just jump in. So, Ron, can you?
Yes, and that was probably the smallest consent agenda we've had since I've been here. But we do have a number of business items to get through. The first one is this most important one from a revenue standpoint. Is we did this lease for 10,660, actually now 11,079 square feet in the Johnson Building, which is basically all the remaining space on the second floor. It's a lease with Florida State for the FSU Department of Anthropology that's moving from Tennessee Street to the park. They're really excited about being back together. They used to be together on campus when SEAC first came to town, is my understanding. But anyway, the lease is as amended, as you see in item C, in which I sent to you earlier today, is going to be for $15,233.63 a month.
Okay, pause for a moment. That's a good
This is fantastic.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, we'll later in the agenda, when we do the financial update, I'll explain what the impact of all of that's going to be on our budget, so you kind of see how that shakes out. Also included in this item is, in item 7B, is a conflict of interest consent because of Melissa's firm, Brock Cassell, representing FSU on a number of matters. They did not represent them on this particular matter. So it still requires that we get consent to waive the conflict of interest.
Can we do that as a joint motion to approve both at the same time, or would you like separate motions?
I think you can approve all three at the same time.
All three. All three of them.
So okay. you've got the lease, you've got the conflict of interest consent, and then the lease amendment, which is yet to be executed, is to just add this additional 415 square feet. When we did the initial lease, we thought one office was part of the Park Service. It turns out it was not. It actually worked out very well because it helps define where we're going to put a door dividing the two spaces. It just works out perfectly. So, and we get a little extra money.
I'm just curious why FSU would do such a short-term lease.
Because they are looking to
Welcome.
So, first of all, they were kind of rushed to get out of the building because of the development that's going to happen. Apparently, Target is going to build a store there. So they have a very short time to get it done. They intend at some point in the next 2 to 4 years to get something done on campus. They cannot do classrooms out here, and they'd like to either have classrooms in the facility or be closer to classrooms. But for the time being, they're happy to do it this way.
Okay.
And it's really easy for them. The only improvements they have to make, really, some carpet, they're going to pay for all the improvements. carpet, tile, and paint. And then they're also adding, as I mentioned, one partition door, some security, some IT stuff, but otherwise it's pretty quick. They're going to remove one wall where they're going to put a lab in, a small lab, but it's pretty quick and easy. They're actually going to start construction on the improvements on Monday, so they can be in there August 1st. So it was a quick turnaround. We had to move real fast, but...
Yeah,
it's a good question, April. It's it's a short term deal.
Yeah,
but it's money.
Yeah,
our hope is.
I just didn't know if it was the potential to become a longer.
Well, our hope is that they do it the same way they did it when they moved to Tennessee, because they said the same thing apparently when they moved there.
I was just going to say that actually.
And but I'm assured that's not going to happen this time. But you never know.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't mind, I think one benefit here is that Ron has been working with National Park Service for years, and there's been some incremental progress on that part, but with the federal budget, that's not happening anytime soon.
So yeah.
SEAC, I think, also sees benefit in being aligned with them. So we've got two groups that are waiting on federal and state funding, right? And both could need more time, or maybe something changes for both of them around the same time. So,
and we had a great conversation. We actually pulled SEAC in before we did the lease, and just we got them to confirm that there was nothing going to happen. That they and I think when push came to shove, and they knew there was a deadline, they got a definitive no from their regional office in Atlanta that was not going to be funded right now. Mm-hmm. Now, in a couple of years, who knows? You know how things will change. And at that point, in 4 years maybe, maybe the picture looks differently and they'll be willing to take over that space. And we're going to, we'll stay up with them on that. They're going to keep, doing whatever they got to do to keep that ball moving. But, and then at the same time, they were involved in the improvement decisions. They actually came to the meeting, so we made sure everybody's on the same page on access and security and all that, because SEAC has some very special security requirements for Homeland Security issues, and I didn't know there were Homeland Security issues to do with stuff that doesn't move. Yeah.
The improvements they're making, they're kind of in line with improvements the National Park, may want for that space in the future, or is it completely opposite because they were going to move the archive? I don't remember.
Well, let me tell you the downside to having them at the meeting is they would not like all new carpet and tile on the first floor, which I believe their contract entitles them to. It's been a while, so Stephanie's in the process of getting quotes on that. We'll see what we have to do and what we are willing to do at that point. We'll bring that back. But they brought up the issue. They like what FSU is doing with that upstairs, and they want to do the same thing and make it consistent. So
that's good.
So it should be good. It's just a matter of, once people see the dollars rolling in, it's like, hey, let's spend some of that. So, and we've already done a lot of work trying to get the facility ready. We had 50 something light fixtures that it's in her report, but there's a bunch of light fixtures that, because they just over a period of time, the bulbs became fused to the fixture, and so we had to replace the whole fixture. So we've replaced a bunch of those just to get it ready for FSU to start working on Monday. Just doing all the things we can to make sure it's seamless getting them in. So we can start collecting rent.
Okay. Any more questions? Did you make a motion?
All three items.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And number eight, Ron?
Yeah, this is the FSU Northwest Regional Data Center in the Morgan Building. Just the backstory on this is that while we were working...
Would you mind scrolling?
Oh, sure.
Where are we?
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
I
can kind of see that.
Okay. So we had been working with FAMU to take over the rest of the space in the Morgan Building. We've given them about 6 months to consider this. We've put together the cost estimates to do the improvements. We finally got a meeting between Dr. Robinson and Kristen, and they basically determined that they couldn't afford to do what had been proposed. And the specs were based on what the department had asked for. So they want to come back and take another look at how they can reduce the cost. So what that did, though, is while we were waiting for them to make a decision, Northwest Regional Data Center had asked to lease this additional space of about 2,000 square feet that brought them up to the total of 4,000 square feet. So what we did is an amendment to their existing lease, which went month to month. So if AMU pulled the trigger and said, we're going to lease all of it, it would have allowed NWRDC to get out of their current lease and go move somewhere else. You know, it was 10,000 square feet versus 2,000 square feet, so we had to play that balancing act. Well, as soon as FAMU decided they couldn't afford to do that, we went ahead and executed this longer-term lease so that they can be secure in their space. So it's a three-year lease with 2 one-year options.
Okay. Questions?
Move approval.
Motion?
Yeah.
Second?
The remaining? Is it 6,000?
The total lease is 4,000.
Right, so is there the remaining vacant on that first floor? Do we need
for the whole building, yeah. It's about, I believe it's around 8,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. So, I met with a broker yesterday just to kind of get some ideas, and so I'm going to work on that and see what makes sense. The challenge with us in hiring a broker, we did a little trial with Talcor to see how that might work, and honestly, I think just a traditional broker arrangement is maybe not the best thing to do. I got some ideas yesterday from someone who's worked in state government who is now a broker and who kind of got a little background on what we're trying to do. And so he's going to put together some ideas. And I asked him if he had any example RFPs for similar types of arrangements. Is there a global company, global real estate firm? Mm-hmm. Was it Keller Williams?
Okay.
To see if he could pull some of that together, so he's going to do that for me. So we'll come back with some ideas on how we might try to lease the rest of that space. In the meantime, we already have a listing, or sort of a listing flyer. We provided that to OEV, so they're aware of what's out there. I have gotten a call or two, but again, most people are looking for ready to go lab space or.
And tell me again what the square footage is.
It's around 8,000 square feet total, but it's all broken up. We got a couple of suites. There's a couple of suites of up to like 1,500 square feet. There's three suites, and the rest of it's just all single offices on a hallway.
And who is the person you talked to? Just so
Ron Goldstein, Pedicabs.
Is all the space contiguous?
No.
No.
Okay.
It's all chopped up.
Okay.
But we'll take another look at that. So we did this amendment, and also there's, again, the same conflict of interest exists with Ron himself.
Any further questions?
Okay. This is two good things.
I think we have, all in favor?
A and B, yes.
Yeah. Opposed? Okay, passes. Number nine.
Yes, on number nine, going through the process these last couple of times with FSU on these leases, the Department of Anthropology lease, according to policy, I would not have been able to do anyway because of the square footage. I'm going to pull up our policy real quick here for those that
thank you, Ryan.
Don't recall the policies that we adopted last, I think it was last time. And also, it's good so you can see, if you go to our website, the About, you go down here to Policies, you can pull up. There's a list of all the policies. So our newest one is 1601, this lease policy. And so the policy outlines the requirements for me to be able to approve a lease. Anything that doesn't meet these requirements has to be approved by the board. And the idea being that we're doing some smaller leases, there's no sense in tying the board up with all of this stuff. So in the case of the NWRDC lease, we could not, you guys had to review and approve that lease because it's for space, even though it's for space less than 5,000 square feet, the lease is not the standard lease, okay? So at the same time we did this policy, you all adopted a standard lease, and it's a typical small office kind of lease. Well, FSU and state entities have special requirements for their leases, certain clauses limiting their liability, for example, other clauses that have to do with being able to get out of the lease if they don't have funding, those sort of things. And they're very typical of every lease we've ever done with FSU or the state. So what I did is I drafted, basically I took a copy of the lease you just approved for Anthropology and for NWRDC, and I made some blanks on it, took you know, the fill in the blank stuff, and said this can be the boilerplate standard lease for universities and state government, so that it will still allow me to do these kind of leases for 5,000 square feet or less. So we will have two standard leases, one for...
Perfect.
Does that make sense?
Does everybody get that? Ron does a great job of writing this up, but I didn't want it to be so short that we didn't understand what we were doing. So it makes...
Yeah, so this item 6 down here is one of the elements which says the form of the lease is consistent with the standard authority lease approved by the board. And that and council reviewed the lease and said, no, these are not minor modifications, so we need to get board approval. This would be another standard form, and as long as we don't deviate too far from that for that type of lease, this, we wouldn't need to get board approval.
But we're still under 5,000.
Yes, still under 5,000.
Okay, I think that's the, in some ways for me, that's the take home. So... can I have a motion?
Did this, I don't remember seeing it. I went through it real quick, but does it have a place in here for individual guarantees of these leases?
On the standard lease?
Yes.
On the other standard lease? I mean, we're not requiring that of the universities, but...
No, I'm talking about when we have some of these smaller ones, and this is what we use for that, so...
I don't recall. I don't think we do. Yeah. No, wait a minute. I think we may, actually.
I think it needs to be, in most cases, incorporated.
Yes, and I know we got one from Sensitech.
That's the one I was remembering, too.
I remember discussing this before, I think, and I think what we came to was, yeah, a lot of times you're going to have one, but maybe sometimes you wouldn't. But
yeah, and I can check into that, Dave, and report back on that.
Obviously, we're not going to ask FSU for it, but
for the state,
have these smaller ones.
And then the other challenge we run into is that most of these smaller ones are don't have any money personally either. So it's going to be tough to go get stuff. But I think we did do it.
At least they have our attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have their attention, I guess. Whatever.
And I do think that this was the conversation we have, that it should be our policy to do that. But whether it needs to be a part of the form so that you're deviating if you don't do it, they're a slightly different question.
Yes.
So, go ahead. May I just ask, so on the standard lease, you would be able to enter into an agreement, and then would that be part of a consent agenda at a later board meeting? Or
it's just... I have the authority. I have the delegated authority.
Okay. Should there be somebody from the board who at least is... copied, is aware of that?
I actually it's required in the policy that I report to the board that I did the lease. And if you look at my report that I gave, it does state in there that I've done a small lease.
Okay.
So you have to read my report, though, to see that.
But in practice, and I would assume you're still doing it, there's constant communication with the chair. So if you have an opportunity for a lease, you're often... or always talking to the chair about it, right?
But it's a good point. Yeah. Ron may not always be the executive director.
Right.
I may not always be the chair.
Yeah.
But this requirement of reporting, I think, does cover.
It is documented in there. Most of the time, it's like I just added one more office to this guy's lease down here.
But it could be, my next door neighbor wants to do a cotton candy, I mean, it could be something that's just weird. And
the policy says they can't do that.
They can't do cotton candy.
Yeah.
There's a no cotton candy clause.
Well, there's a conflict of interest clause.
Well, if it's not my neighbor, but it could be, some random person who is doing something that we think that's not a good use of that space, and that's not part of our mission.
Yeah. And that's
So that there's some way to have somebody from the board looking at it is my only...
Well, if in doubt, that is my obligation.
It's not when you're here, but it's when...
No. And I firmly believe that policy should be written for whoever's here. And there are enough requirements in the covenants and restrictions in my contract that says I have to follow all policies and other requirements of the board. And so... What we've tried to do in the last several years is to move away from the board serving in a day-to-day oversight responsibility. So we've tried to create policies that gives me very clear guidelines on what I can and can't do. Okay, so at the end of the day, it's like anything else. You know, how much does the board really need to oversee everything that I do? So the policies are set such that you guys are saying these are things we don't feel it's necessary to oversee. So I know that there are requirements for the park and what things can and can't go in here. It can get gray at times. Mm-hmm. And so in those situations, if I'm unclear, then I can ask for direction on that, and I typically do.
This is 180 degrees different than when Krista and I came on the board.
Yep.
None of those policies were available, let alone created.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the nice part, and that's why I've worked hard. Yeah. That's the reason I did this policy just a little while ago, was because it wasn't clear.
Right.
And we had to bring every little office lease to the board, you know, for approval.
Makes sense.
And it's my intent to create more policies that clearly describe what it is I'm responsible for and have the authority to do. So.
Okay.
And that's actually a good clarification. There were no policies, and then the pendulum swung really far the other way.
Really?
That was, yes, really far. And now we're at that middle ground where, we have more internal
controls. Yeah, they had committees that were responsible for overseeing every transaction, basically.
Just, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else? So I don't think we've had a motion. Dave had a question with regard to requiring personal guarantees. I think, Ron, what you have said is that you will look into that and come back. Can we go ahead and approve this as written with that understanding?
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The Entrepreneurial Excellence Program.
Okay. I could win
20
minutes. I've got to turn on the quiet hour so I don't get any more notifications about the sweepstakes that I just won. So the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program, we submitted legislative funding requests, both to the House and Senate representatives. Needless to say, we did not get any funding from the legislature. I reached out to J.T. Burnett with Inkbridge. As you may recall, we have an escrow agreement with them, or a support agreement, basically, that says that they would provide $100,000 in conjunction with the lease that they did for the Sunnyland Solar Sausages, and which they did, and we spent some of that money down. We have $35,000 remaining in escrow. And JT, as required by the agreement, we have to at least consult with Anchorage on the use of the funds. But at the end of the day, the board has complete authority on how those funds are used. So I contacted JT Burnett, who also happens to be a volunteer teaching some of the EEP classes. And he agrees that that's an excellent use of the funds. We used $20,000 previously for EEP, but to fund the next full year would require $40,000, which is the next item on the agenda, Larry Lynch's agreement. So I'm requesting that we utilize the remaining $35,000 that's held in escrow to fund the EEP program for the next year, which would be the October classes and the March classes. And if you want, we can go ahead and throw in the Larry Lynch agreement because they kind of go hand in hand.
I think that would make most sense.
So basically, this is just an amendment to the agreement, it's a restatement of the previous agreement. And I did add one line, which the board has asked for, which is that we measure the economic impact of the program. And I know that he has reached out, that's item 4E, he has reached out to Christina Paredes at OEV. And they are discussing how they can do that. We do have, and you fill me in on this, the surveys that you did?
Yes, we had 50 of them that I've passed on to Lindsay Wolfe, so they'll be working on putting an economic impact report together with that.
So that is moving forward. But otherwise, the agreement is exactly the same as the previous agreement, and the payment is $33.33 a month for a year, which is $40,000.
And the year would be up?
It's June 1st to May 31st, which is really structured based on the way the classes fall.
So it ends May 31, 2018.
Yeah, the effective today.
trying to think a little bit beyond that date and funding for future ones. What do you anticipate our request might be from you or others to fund in future, and how will we do that?
That's next on our list. Yeah, obviously we've got to start working on that, what's going to happen. I don't know if we'll ever get legislative funding. It's kind of a, it's almost too small to really get anyone's attention. No one really, I think, the sense that I got is nobody really wanted to spend any time working on it. But
I got an idea that hadn't bounced off you yet. But I think, and we'll get to the jumpstart options in a moment. I think Ron's right about the small dollar, and then this year was just extra interesting, should we say, at the legislature, so no one was paying attention to these types of things, and it was kind of in a economic development bucket, right, where there was a lot of consternation over different programs. So one thing that I've been wondering about is if we did move forward with an accelerator, we could package some of this, a larger request for programming that could include an EEP program plus other things, and then maybe it's a little more robust, stands out a little bit better. I see a lot of nods from those who work with the legislature, so
and
that's good.
And when you say package, you mean as the capital outlay, building, and program?
It could be building and program. It could be just programming. We would have to look at that. So I wondered if this summer we could either do it out here with multiple, you know, a few board members, you, or we could say Andy Johnson, who works on these issues for the county, we could probably set up a meeting with him and just brainstorm. The committees are starting in September or August, right?
Yeah.
So that's, and it is an election year. I mean, it may be teeing something up for 19, but normally my understanding is, it's best to get it in 1 year, even if you anticipate it taking a few years, right? Mm-hmm. So, does that sound like...
Yeah, I think that's one step we can
one
take.
Step, yeah.
I mean, we've got to look at some other funding sources as well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And whether it's packaged or a loan, you know, this is just, we just got to this point, so we're...
We've not explored sponsorships, have we?
No, but, I mean, that's crossed my mind. We get so many volunteers who are actually teaching this stuff, who are probably the source of a lot of sponsorships, but I mean, it's something we can explore. One of the requirements for Larry in this agreement is that he actually helps us seek out funding, so I'm going to start pressing him a little bit more on how we can go about trying to get some funding.
I have a question. How different is, so I think you may have already mentioned this, but is this, because we already have an agreement in place with Larry, correct?
Yeah, but it expired.
It expired. How different is this agreement than the agreement that...
It is exactly the same except for item 40.
So then the question that I have then is, you know, I look at here and see responsibility for seeking out grant, legislative sponsorship, and otherwise, what work has been done on that? Because, so for instance, even on the legislative side, I'm not sure that Larry was...
He was involved in that process and putting some of the request information together.
Okay. Yeah.
Could he have done more?
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
And did it produce anything? No.
To have a multi, because I agree with everything that Kristen said about just like, the other thing is that, quite frankly, the authority is almost like quasi-local governmental, which also wasn't extremely popular this session as well, I would say. But just the agreement or the legislative request in itself was a multi-year funding request in a single year, which we can't do. And so
that
I think there were some technical, but I mean.
The difference between the Senate and the House, modified the Senate side, yeah.
So I guess that's kind of what I was getting to, right, is what did he do? Could he have done more? That was the question, which it seems like pressing him potentially on some of these deliverables may seem to be something that we need to do.
Definitely. The legislative side, I don't think he could have done any more. But looking for grant funding, I think is something that, or sponsorships or other ways to fund this creatively, I think he could definitely do.
And one thing on that, I think you're absolutely right going forward. I think that's Ron's intent, all of our intent, but we got into this discussion with Monfort's office, say September, October. It was later than would have been ideal to start this. So, and we were learning as we go, you know, new house rules, everything like that, as everybody will know. So I think there were some lessons learned, but once it got in there, there was really no opportunity, you know, from the questions we asked to lobby or anything like that. We, I think city and county had it on our priorities, but and talked to Jeff Sharkey about it, but that was, it was just hung up behind everything else, as Ron said earlier.
We submitted those request forms multiple times because it kept changing the forms on us.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, in my world, yes. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Mm-hmm. I
mean, one question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I was just a piggy on the other thing is, you know, one of the successful things I think that I heard from, or at least our local legislative delegation was, you know, I know it was on city and county priorities, but also submitting a joint, like just more collaboration on the city and county side, just like on the.
That would have been great.
It would have been good. You know, I think starting earlier in the process and also being included in the conversations. Would be helpful on that front because we can get it on our on our priority list. Our lobbyists can know about it, but from the standpoint of like singing from the same song sheet when we're going to these meetings, I'm not sure that we did that in a way that we could be doing it in the future.
Well, Dustin, I think you're speaking in part to something that I really think about this. I think Larry Lynch has done a great job. I think he's got a lot of community contact and outreach. Has he done all of the, ticked all these boxes that we would have liked? Maybe not. But the way I look at this is we have to get our act together to be collaborative about this, to try to get somebody excited about it, which frankly, we have no opportunity to do that. And we're going to have to get somebody excited about it before we have any chance of making something like this happen. So, I think our task is to take this year, and we're getting ready to go into committee meetings, you know, soon, again, is to take this year to really try to make something happen with this if we are, in fact, committed to the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program. And from what I understand, it's a great program. So,
how much was the legislative request?
Well,
$50,000.
$50,000. Yeah, because we can only do 1 year. That's why Ron was saying it just got lost.
Yeah. It just seems to me like that's such a small dollar figure to be trying to fight the legislature to fund, that it should be something that is funded at the local level, whether it's a, you know, monies that come from the city and the county, monies that come from sponsorship and, you know, maybe a third. You know, it just seems like a kind of a waste of time to be trying to get the legislature to approve $50,000 when it really is a local. It seems like a local responsibility.
So that's why we started the discussion with Senator Mumford the year before generally and then dug back in on this specifically. Mm-hmm. And Ron had put together a multi-year request before, you know, knowing the House rules and everything. That looked more robust. There was good numbers there. It was better than what had been submitted by the EDC to Mumford's office, but never, I don't think that ever progressed even to filing a bill. So we got a little more traction with staff from his office and Lorraine Osley's office. They had just been elected, so they were coming in with new rules and everything. But to the local funding and also Dustin, your point about the collaboration, I think we need to have more conversations about that because I guess I feel like as the city county reps, you and I are equally involved with this, being on the board, and to the extent those conversations could happen this year in the limited time, my sense is they did, but starting earlier will help that. But sitting down with OEV and talking with them, getting more formal support from city county, but then also I think it may be time to flesh out what this is like and sit down and have a real conversation with OEV or perhaps the Blueprint Board itself, because in the strategic plan, they detail something that looks like an EEP program.
Right.
But we don't know if, I mean, as a board member, I don't know if that intent was to create that program internally or to fund that program.
Yeah.
The money doesn't come in until after 19, but City County put $1 million over there to help with different things. So there may be some opportunities to get that conversation started as well.
Well, and it just seems like the more you can get that local support, then local eyes are on it, it's more owned by the community, and to me, it's, you know, the legislature has too many other things to deal with than a $50,000 local. I mean,
that's my thought packaging.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know, so from a, and maybe Denise can answer this, but from a, if you had to characterize what your role in EEP is, sort of like how you help the program on a day-to-day basis, what would you say that that is?
I would say I'm more supporting. Like, I talk with Larry to kind of do press releases and different things like that. But when going into a class, I could never be an actual facilitator for it. I don't have the experience. I don't have Larry's personality or anything to it. He really, he puts his experience into it, which really, I think, adds so much value to the program within it that I couldn't do it. So, I mean, I'm good at kind of promoting it, but not actually being a facilitator for it.
For sure. So not to, but so the question wasn't what you can do, what do you do for it? Do you recruit the people who are participating in it?
Yeah, like I do get the applications, and Peggy and I work together on that. I do promote it through our newsletter. I write the press releases. I add stuff to the calendars. I talk with the chamber regarding it. So those are pretty much most, I mostly do just the promotions.
Just promotion and getting the actual participants,
yes.
Recruitment, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's,
and actually, they come from multiple sources. They,
sure.
That's just one. I mean, some come through the website, which is where the applications come from, which she gets. And other stuff, Larry's out in the community talking to people, and he'll get them to say, go to the website and sign up or whatever. So.
But Larry puts together the programs and the presenters.
Yes.
Okay, well, I understand.
And we also provide some administrative support through Peggy on putting binders together and stuff like that.
And board members serve as...
Self-participate,
and Kim did, and others did. So I think it's many levels.
But Larry does all of that coordinating.
Rick? Well, I just want to piggyback on what April said. I think you're saying it, but you weren't really saying it, which is when you look at either funding through the state that normally is like seed money, grant money is seed money. So the real question is, well, what is the strategic plan for this particular program? What's the goal? Is, are we looking at, we want to have this around for the next 20 years? I mean, that's the conversation that you have to have, which then you go into how are you going to sustain it?
Right, and grow it.
And grow it. So you go into the concept of, I'm looking for some short-term money to kind of get us to the next phase, but I think you have to look at, you're going to do phases. So I really believe that what you said really makes sense, which is you eventually have to get to that the community is buying into this, because grants, foundations, they'll give you that startup cash. I've been there and done that one. And the legislature, when we know how fickle they are, you're only going to get it for a short period of time. So I think that that's really where that discussion needs to go. So as you get a group of people together to discuss this, I mean, you have to look at, well, what's our short-term goal here, and how are we going to get there, and then the next one, which is long-term.
And that dovetails perfectly, both your comments, with my gut on this, that as we move forward, if should we move forward with Jumpstart or other programming, again, we'll get to that. This could be a more robust package, particularly on the programming, and it is, even though EEP has been existing, if it is a new structure for that programming or facility, we could seek some of that startup at the same time doing that long-term plan. Completely agree, but it may be more comfortable for us to look at kind of that startup cost coming from some of those short-term sources if it is a larger, a package of programming support or different things. If we sought out grants, there we come back to the question of the 501c3, I think. That's just hanging out there a little bit. Some foundations, others, I'd be real curious. I mean, I think EDA, Economic Development Administration, may be a source. We could package that too. I mean, we're eligible for that, but if there were other private sector funders, I mean, everybody's getting into the space, and we haven't explored that. So as Larry digs into that, if he's going to be our person looking at that, we need to think about grant writers. Can we do it in-house, or if it's 501c3 or something else?
Okay, right. I don't want to cut anybody off. But we're in a conversation here that clearly needs to happen. What we've been doing is replacing local funding that we had.
Yes.
And So again, I think that what we need is, we need this to be status quo as to the processes and it happening for this next year. But we got to use this next year to get something off the ground, because then it's gone. We don't have any more of this money hanging around. So
I have a question. How long have we, has EEP technically been under our purview?
So we've had, what, 3 classes?
Two. Yeah.
It's been a year.
We got it in April.
It's already been a year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Yep.
Post-EDC.
Yeah.
Post-EDC, right.
Yeah.
Well,
it's in the middle. You were in mid-class, I think, when that happened.
They were conducting their last class. You're right.
Yeah, we took up, and we received the funding that they had from
the leftover. Yeah, the remaining funding.
Yep.
About $20,000 for money. Yeah. So we basically, we funded $20,000 ourselves. That's it so far.
Okay. Sorry, did we have a motion?
That's assigned to the director to report back to us.
Well, and it means, should there be like a subcommittee or somebody who's looking at the long-term sustainability of that, that is beginning to, you know, talk with the chamber, talk with the city and county, figure out what's the best model for this long-term. I mean, I think it's great for Ron to do that, but I do think that it's our responsibility to ensure that long-term success. So,
I think a brainstorming meeting, not to add more, I mean, instead of,
yes,
I don't know if we
need
to establish a committee or something,
okay,
but if we had a brainstorming meeting sometime this summer and brought in, you know,
had Larry, had some of the chamber
Larry
people.
Do a cursory, had, I think, chamber and OEV's buy-in to this, and having them in the room is crucial. If we had multiple board members, I mean, you know, others know a lot about this, and city, county directly at the table, I think that would be the most efficient.
Yeah.
And everybody do a little work before that and come in the room and, you know, assess our options. Do you think that's possible, Ron?
Sure.
That's the last. One more meeting?
Just the last thing I'll say, and this is just my opinion, probably not very popular because I've brought this up before, but I think we're overpaying for this service. I think I love Larry and I love the EEP program, but I think it's under-delivering for what we're paying for. This is my gut. For instance, if we're, you know, if this is an exact agreement that was signed before for his participation, you know, I'd be interested. It would probably been good to see the annual report, to see, you know, the work that had already been done, so that we would make a determination whether or not we were going to move forward with another year's agreement. I think, to your point before about, like, you know, we need to brainstorm and come up with a plan, I think Larry ought to do that. I mean, that's literally in this agreement, that's one of his responsibilities, to figure out how exactly we fund this. And so I think my biggest concern is that if we didn't vote for this, that the EEP program would probably go defunct because we don't have a plan of action moving forward. But that's literally the only reason why this is probably going to have my support today, because I think it's just $40,000 for as great of a job, and but it's ultimately leveraging personal relationships that I would argue a lot of those people, just because they participate in the program for a long time, they do it for free, they would continue to do it for free. It's not like they just do it just because of Larry. That's just my opinion. Again, maybe people may feel differently about that, but I think if we're going to take this year, we really need to, like, I think, put Larry's feet to the fire to make sure that we're getting the deliverables that we say that we're getting in these kinds of contractual relationships. Because, again, I'm going to fully state, I think it's we're overpaying and he's under-delivering. That's what I feel.
Okay, well, I appreciate your viewpoint. I appreciate your putting it out there, because I think we have to keep looking hard at what we're paying for. So, I wonder if I could get a motion to approve 10A and B. The motion, I assume, could contain an additional qualification about proceeding with a strategic planning session for the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program over this summer.
With that qualification in there, or additional language, I move acceptance of the motion.
And I would just amend that and ask that Larry provide a draft that that could be used as a starting point for that discussion.
Okay. So. Peggy, you got that? Mm-hmm. And does everybody understand the motion then? So,
second.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. That was a good discussion.
Last time on that, yes, Dustin, I think for this meeting, I think it's right to have Lori produce a report about options. I think we talked about the future and having to change this, should we get funding and all of that. But if you would identify the appropriate city staff that may be helpful in this meeting, I can get names to Ron for county and for, you know, we've got OEB already. Ron works with them closely, and build a list, because I don't think we're putting this on Ron necessarily to come with a lot of stuff if this meeting happens.
Yeah.
It would be more brainstorming and checking our options, and I think dovetailing it with whatever happens with Jumpstart is going to be good. So will you provide a list to Ron?
Sure.
All right. Great. Ron, can you tell us about the check grant award agreements?
Yes. We had our elevator pitch night on May the 17th. And it went very, very well, and Denise can tell you more in her report. But first place winner was KinderMed. They won the $15,000 prize or grant. And since Tech Propulsion, who is the tenant in this building, won second place, which is good. Now they can pay their rent. $10,000. So these agreements just represent the awarding of those grants.
Okay. Any questions?
I want to applaud Ron, Peggy, Denise, particularly since Ron was just getting back from Nashville. It was excellent. Great event. The diversity of the finalists and the incredible presentations and the really, technology that they had. It is improving every year. And this was just, it really stood out this year. People were excited about it. So well done.
Thank you.
Okay.
Denise,
yeah,
really should get 99.9.
Thank you.
I will tell you, in the past, I've had to do a lot more work on this, and if I hadn't felt comfortable with what she was doing, I wouldn't have gone to Nashville, because I got back 45 minutes before the program started.
And
we were having some technical difficulties, and they got it all worked out before I even got there. So
Denise was great.
Yeah.
Did the online voting work?
We didn't do
it. We didn't do it online this year.
Yeah.
I'm super sad that I missed it, but I'm wondering about that particular.
We went back old school with paper ballots. So.
It's all right. It's all right.
That thing about the tech working really great.
Yeah.
That's right.
We blamed the lack of cell reception for Sprint customers.
Yeah. So. Okay. Can I have a motion to?
So is.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Passes. Mr. Ramsey, our treasurer.
Yes, ma'am.
How are we doing?
Under attachment H, you will see a summary of the financials of the organization. I think I'll just say in summary, we've experienced a tough year. The nice thing is, with Ron's report today, I think we're going to see a much, much improved period of time beginning here in the next few months. So, while our cash is still good, our bottom line still has a little bit to be desired, but much of that will be overcome, and each will give a little more detailed report on that also coming up. So,
trying to figure out how to get my head out of the way here. Try this. So what I've done is, and you've all got the financial statements, I'm not going to go through where we are necessarily in April and all of this, but what I wanted to show is sort of a forecast. Now, the balance sheet is actually where we're at in April, so you can kind of see for the whole year what's changed. Our cash situation is okay. We're pretty close to where our minimum balance requirements are, which is 250. Hancock is not. First of all, this is book balance, not the bank balance, and as you know, there are differences, but we stay pretty close, and Hancock doesn't have a problem with where we're at this time. But our receivables, that change is the reduction of $41,000 has mostly to do with our CAM, our common area maintenance, which we bill at the end of the year, but we accrue it month to month, and that's just the fluctuation and the difference in how much we collected, which we've collected all but $600 of what was billed versus what we accrue every month. So we're working on the $600. It's FSU. We're having a hard time tracking them down. But no, I'm kidding. It's,
aren't they sitting here?
Well, Eric doesn't pay the bill.
This is true.
It has to do with the restructuring and how we built for that lot 1B1, that little parking lot behind the Phipps building that they got as part of that deal. Nobody knows who's supposed to pay for that, so we're trying to sort that out. You can see there's the trust escrow amount, the $35,000, then some prepaid stuff. You can see all that's pretty much consistent. The investments is just interest earnings minus $10,000 that we did take out when we closed our Fligit account and moved that balance into cash, so we have a little more, get a little closer to our minimum balance requirements. And then the rest of that is just normal fluctuation. This is what I really wanted to just say, which is, this is a kind of a back of the envelope forecast to take into consideration the impact of this new Anthropologie lease, because we all looked and saw that's a big number. Then I'll show you the breakdown on the actual lease and the impact for next year, but I've tried to take our actual 7 months and then see what I think is going to happen in the remaining 5 months and get that into these numbers here, so, and compare that to our original budget. The big difference, the $55,000 obviously, is the rent. That's 2 months of the Anthropologie rent. Plus, we had NWRDC additional space was not in our original lease, but that kind of started at the beginning of the year. And we've had a couple of little small leases that are in there. And then the EEP program revenue, we plugged $44,000 in there, expecting to get the legislative request, which we did not. Now, we do have other program revenue we get, which are the fees that we collect from participants. So you can see there that with this additional rents, we were able to cover that in the budget. And we knew that going in, that was a possibility, but we wanted to include that just in case. And then when you look at our operating expenses and the bottom line, which is the net operating income, now all this is all before depreciation, because we budget, we don't budget based on depreciation, we do it more kind of quasi-cash basis. So you can see the payroll expense is a negative variance of a couple $1,000, and that's because y'all were generous enough to give me 1% more than what we had in the budget in my increase, but everything else is very much in line. The other things, utilities, repairs and maintenance, cleaning improvements, and services do tend to fluctuate just, you know, based on what's going on with the buildings and stuff. But services mostly has to do with the savings from the HVAC preventative maintenance contract that we just redid. And then the total property administration is $8,000 favorable. It would be even better if not for the, you see there, it says non-CAM professional fees, negative $8,696. We pull that out separately just so we can see what it is, and that's the Bing Energy legal fees that we've had to pay. Melissa's doing real well. She's got a positive variance of $4,700.
Nice.
So the rest of that is just sort of normal.
You don't have to split it.
Yeah. We'll have her call her old firm and ask for some money from them. Research grants, you see there, that's positive. That's the tech grant. The $3,900 is the amount that we recovered back from the prior participants, the first time that's ever happened to my knowledge, but they actually returned $3,900 in funds that they didn't use. Anyway, the rest of that's pretty good. So total operating expenses, we're projecting to be $21,000 positive to budget.
And what?
No. Oh. Right. It's like federal accounting on what we call increase, right? So compared to budget, we're $21,000 favorable, about $50,000 on the bottom favorable, but we are expecting to still lose about $35,000. This number right here.
I got you.
So now that's this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, you know, there's some expenses that are going to go up and down. This is just best guess. We've already, like I said, had to put some money into things like the light fixtures and trying to get some of the properties ready. Phipps needs new carpet, and we just did a major, if you read her report, we just did a major cleanup at the Morgan Johnson buildings, cutting trees back, getting the landscaping looking better, things we've sort of been hanging back on because of lack of funding. So it's looking a lot better over there, and we've still got more stuff we're going to work on and try to get done. So here's the impact of FSU Anthropology. You can see the total rent, annual rent is $182,000. This is just a guess on expenses based on our per square foot costs currently in that building. So that's pretty good. So it's about $12,000 a month net. Keep in mind for our renting customers, for those that don't know, at some point we got to pay to do major renovations for this building. So even though we're covering our operating deficit, we need to very soon start reserving some funds for some major upgrades and major improvements. We have $1.4 million in reserve that you saw on the balance sheet in our investments that the board has designated for such future improvements. But that's not going to be a drop in the bucket compared to what's going to have to happen, particularly with something that you'll see related to the Collins building and how the buildings are, what the ventilation is above the ceiling and how we get all this humidity and moisture in. We have the same problems in Morgan and Johnson. And so we're going to have some major issues to deal with at some point. And we already have reports that were done before I got here from H2 Engineering that kind of details all of those issues. So at some point we're going to have to address that. So before everybody gets excited about, hey, look at all this money, keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
So what I did is I just said, okay, what if, if all this continues, our forecast for last year plus what we think we're going to get in addition next year, because we'll have 2 months of Anthropology in this fiscal year. Next year we'll have an additional 10 months. What does that look like? And so roughly we're talking $85,000 in the black next year. Also keep in mind that this assumes that all the costs stay the same and all the favorable variances that we have this year will continue next year, which they might not. But we're going to get into the budget cycle coming up. It starts in August. And we'll have budget committee meetings in September and bring the budget to the board at the first meeting in October.
So, Madam Chair, I think the summary of that, the good news is we're projecting for this year $27,000 more than we had in the budget for revenue and $21,000 less than we had in the budget for expenses. So we'll be favorable, assuming everything between now and year end comes out, $49,000 better than budget.
Thank you, both of you. I think that's a very succinct and clear summary of where we are. Questions? Okay.
I guess the fiscal year is July.
September 30th.
Chris?
I may get one of those looks from Ron that we're not ready to do this, or it's just too much on the plate right now, but I think we've done well a couple years ago doing the strategic planning and kind of a living plan and things like that. But what you just made me wonder, again, this ties in for any new construction or anything else we want to do, but, and with something you said, Rick, the long term, the immediate 1 year planning, the 5 year planning, the longer term planning, we've got a lot of different things floating around, ideas about developing other property, things like that. And this, it may be something we can do, it may be something that we need some help doing, but kind of projecting out, if we had X amount of good, best case, realistic scenario, but X amount of good leasable space, where do the revenues come in, what does that bottom line look like versus programming, things like that. I mean, it's, you may already have that in your head. For
a long-term forecast?
Yeah, I mean, as we start to look at, is it in our interest to build leasable space or common areas that may, provide meeting space or other things like that? I mean, there's a kind of a qualitative value in that, in having a more robust park that attracts a lot of folks and others. But, kind of looking at some of the hard numbers may help us make some of those decisions.
It's not a hard decision. The answer is yes.
Every time I talk
about our funding source, I say we get no tax dollars. It all comes from that. So if we want to expand programs, if we need to fund EEP on our own, if we need to do more types of programming, which I think we all agree we want to in the long run, if we want to hire somebody who can go out and do recruitment for the park, whether we have an employee or a contractor or participate with OEV in some way financially or with FSU or however, or FAMU or however that's going to work, we're going to need more money. And the only way for us to get more money, or the primary way we get more money, is by having more leasable space.
Well, and to kind of follow up on what I heard Kristen saying, because the idea of extensive long-term maintenance requirements here just smacks me up against the head, because we're talking about being barely in the black, and we're talking about a giant sucking hole sitting off to one side. And so as we talk about Jumpstart or anything else, we have to make sure that we are looking at the biggest picture and at the prospect of potentially, you know, getting clients who do all their own improvements of, which, I mean, that's been pie in the sky in the past, and maybe it still is, but a lot of moving parts.
Let me add, I have asked Stephanie to take a look at the buildings, and then as part of our budget process this year, we will come up with like a 5-year plan on the things that we see coming down the road that are going to need to be addressed, basically a 5-year capital plan. So we'll at least have that going. We're not going to be able to address everything, but we'll just kind of identify where we think things are at. For example, as you will see in the next item with the roof on the Collins building, for example, that's something we should be able to set to have some idea of when we need major replacements on a roof, and we should be able to look into that. So.
Absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate this. Obviously, our job as a board is at least twofold. We've got to make sure that the wheels are on, that the trains are running more or less on time, and then we have to really figure out whether we're doing something that's worth doing and try to do that also. And it's hard to get those things running together, but I think we're trying to do a pretty good job. So, Kristen, can I preempt you? I've got three and move my chair report just because I want to get this off the line. It'll be very brief.
We're doing well on time.
I think we're doing great.
Yeah.
Since our last meeting,
you just changed it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ron and I met with Faye Gibson, who has undertaken the rebranding of the FSU College of Engineering. She is the dean's wife and a person very well qualified to do that. We had a great conversation with her. I think that that's something that will continue to move forward. I don't know how, but she's intent on trying to make something happen there. And one of the things that we discussed with regard to the engineering school is the need for affordable housing for those students who aren't necessarily typical students, maybe a little older, a little more serious, et cetera. And the reason I wanted to run this together is to let you know, I think I told Ron this, almost a year ago now, I met with Paul Bradshaw after he acquired some of that property on Railroad Avenue. And if you've been seeing the articles in the paper, he is really, I think, intent on doing this container housing project on Railroad Avenue. And I think he's got the whatever to actually make that happen. I took him out in the car and toured him all around here so that he could see what the connections are, what the possibilities are. And I just am delighted that somebody who has some money, some development experience, whatever, is going to do a private project like this. He'd be happy to come and talk to the board at some point if we ever have time, just to hear something that would be kind of fun to hear. But mostly I just wanted to say, in my view, this is something that potentially very much works to our benefit. We don't have anything, we're not supporting it, we don't have to give any money or anything, but he doesn't have all the approvals yet, so I hope he will get them. Obviously, it's a very new sort of thing that he's trying to do. But having that kind of what I would call sort of alternative housing for the people that we are eventually going to be trying to attract to Jumpstart, to other high-tech enterprises out here, I think is just a real a real great piece of the puzzle. So keep your eyes on that. And then I had a question. Don't mean to put you on the spot, Eric, but are we keeping up with the FSU long-term plan for this sector, at least to the extent that we kind of know that we're being taken into account? Well, pretty hard to.
When you say sector, is it Innovation Park?
Or? Innovation Park, and all of the stuff about how it's going to connect to Orange Avenue, how it's going to, how the roads are going to work.
To be fully informed, I think would require a conversation with facilities.
So they don't have you in the loop?
Not the research office.
Okay.
We had a little bit more, maybe Mary Jo might know some.
FSU facilities, sorry. I know that FSU, we're dictated by statute to update our master plan.
And
that's one of the things that we are currently doing. And obviously we have to do it for the main campus, and we have to do it for this campus and all the other properties that we have out there. A lot of that is part of a numbers game, and it's a lot of things that are just stipulated, like I had to tell them how many parking spaces we're putting in IRCB and things like that. I don't know to the extent to which they actually get participants involved in the process, but I can find out again.
Okay.
It's part of the public outreach process. Well, they have to do that for the master plan.
Yeah.
But what the time frame is for that, I can't speak to.
Well, they checked that box with us. Ron and I met with the property people, but that was a long time ago now. So whatever's happening going forward, I don't have a clue.
Well,
anything you can help with would be great.
The property office. Who did you speak to?
Will Butler.
This is different
from FSU master plan facility. That's completely different.
Oh, all right. Then I misunderstood that.
Yeah,
right.
That is not part of the master plan process. So.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Marsha.
No, go ahead.
This is what I was going to say. Is there's
elements.
Are probably two parallel, at least two.
Okay.
But there are two parallel issues to be tracked right now. One is the master planning statute that facilities is going through.
Yeah.
You're going to have some of the information, perhaps, that's on the other side, but I would anticipate there are other conversations happening about future funding or plans that may not be in facilities right now.
Right.
Haven't moved that far. So Will Butler and Kevin Graham, David Coburn, those are the others to have conversations with, and Department of Place and Blueprint and City and County. I mean, all of them are involved. So yes to being part of the master plan, but that other piece about the road alignment, about different things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think we can rely on the sector,
on the master plan. And all of that is really speculative at this point.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as the master plan goes, though, we do have a need to work with them to make sure that our covenants and restrictions, which we have been trying to get amended for a very long time,
I'm not looking at that.
Melissa
and I will just meet up.
It's a priority. It's just been about priorities, but. So we do need to get with them on that and make sure I can find out. Yeah, if you could, that would be very helpful.
Okay.
And can I ask a question since you brought it up? IRCB, legislature, what happened with that?
Currently, it went to the governor yesterday in the form of we are listed as an $8 million commitment. However, that is not enough to get us started on construction during the next fiscal year. There are some people that will beg to differ, but it really is not sufficient. That combined with the portion of our match that we can access right now, it's not sufficient to really start on construction and have it run continuously, and we really need that to run continuously in order to implement that project correctly.
So, and that would assume that you got future funding, right? I mean, that's
It would assume that we would get the balance of what our ask is next year, which is $36 million.
And that's a big assumption.
That's a big leap of faith that I don't think we can risk making.
Okay. Having said what you
said, there are parties in the university.
Correct. And so
it is a
the expectation is, of course, we'll get the $8 million. And that's absolutely necessary. The question is how much risk people are willing to take, and that has not yet been decided. Mary Jo's comments are certainly well taken, but there are downsides to waiting, and depending on how much risk people are willing to take, we may step forward. I don't know.
Okay.
Too soon to say right now. Okay. That will be known in the next month or so.
He's got to sign off on the $8 million first, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, there's a number of things we don't know here.
Two quick questions on that.
Yeah.
The article in today's paper, it was just a general, now all these Leon County FSU FAMU things are, city things are in front of the governor, may or may not get them. There was really no specifics. It was just kind of
the number was not correct.
Yeah, the number wasn't. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but it's okay. So I read that correctly, that it was just the typical cautionary story before the governor reviews.
The ask on FSU's part is, I'm sitting here adding it up, I think it's either 33 or 36 million spread over four different projects.
Right.
And he can line item veto any one of those four. So we won't know for another 2 weeks.
That's his deadline, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
The 15th is his deadline,
The EOS
has
is
the budget?
Finishing that as a top.
He got it yesterday.
Yeah.
Then an RCB.
Right, which is the
oceanography. Yeah.
So is the race for staff, is that still in question? What are
All I know is projects. I don't know anything about other.
Boys time for staff.
I think everything has.
It's subject.
That whole package was state board versus. I mean,
and that does not.
There were a lot of different things. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm the one who started this, but can we keep going? And just to put a cap on it, I appreciate any information that any of you have who touch these things more than I do bring back, because it's all part of deciding what the heck we are going to do. So I appreciate that. Okay. Kristen.
Before we go, did you want to put a reminder about what we need to get done before the next meeting, which is deciding on officers, or at least get some people to commit to being officers?
Well, you're not talking about doing that here today.
All I wanted to say is...
A month later.
You will be getting phone calls.
I may want to wait for April to come back to see
You could receive a phone call.
Yeah.
Answer your phone.
Once you go ahead, I'll talk about that in my report or something.
Okay, I think that works.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so some of us were talking before we started just about how busy everything is right now, so I had hoped to get a report that was sitting on the table when you walked in a little earlier in the week, but I'm just going to walk through it with all of us sitting here. You did get the status report from Lewis and Woodlock Architects as part of the agenda package, but what I have drafted this two-page will be entered into the record after this part of the meeting. But these are our options right now, I think. Ron and I have talked about it a lot. Appreciate Mary Jo. We are not under sunshine, and we've been on two conference calls, I think, talking through information from Lewis and Whitlock. So I will skim through this, the first part, pretty quick. Again, I was writing this, one, as a full update, but also knowing that we needed to document this for the record. So I don't think we need to spend much time on the first part, but if you got any questions or if there's, you know, any reminders you need, just stop me whenever. Good?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first section here, really I just summarized the good work by the Jumpstart Committee, who met several times. You remember, did a survey. We met with a lot of potential user groups for light manufacturing, clean manufacturing, makerspace, and wet lab. And I just summarized, and there may be others, but these were some key takeaways from that, you know, work product that came out of that committee work in addition to Lewis and Whitlock. So from demonstrating that there is clear demand, and both coming up from companies that are in town and need this space, or those who have rented space in other communities and would like to move back. These potential tenants are startup companies that would need an incubating program, but also, or accelerator program, but also second stage companies that simply can't build their own facility and may be able to pay a little bit more. A lot of discussions with FAMU FSU Engineering about makerspace, about shared equipment, about agreements with those types of things. And really broad support for this type of project. This is filling a substantial gap in our, as we say, entrepreneurial ecosystem to grow and maintain companies in our area that not just are coming out of or based on research coming out of universities, but also, you know, someone who comes up with a prototype, SenseTech. The gentleman who developed that product, he was at Emory-Riddle. So this is not just emanating from the universities. This is coming from a lot of different places. And he is in Daytona right now at space. That may be very specialized aviation space, but I asked him to let us know what kind of space that is, just whether or not a company like his could do that work in town. So there's a lot of other questions that could be asked. So we got a really good summary. This is building on the feasibility study that we did a while ago. If you remember, for those who were here, we've talked about this before, the business plan, the conclusion of that was a very large multi-story facility for a multi-use incubator or accelerator that would occupy the entire facility. I want to separate that from what I'm going to get to at the end of our, you know, kind of our options. That option is not contemplated in this report for
correct.
The standalone. Yeah.
And if I could just clarify,
please.
We kind of use the term accelerator and incubator interchangeably.
Thank you.
Don't worry about the difference at this point. It's
yeah.
more, that's more programmatic than it is facility, but
I'm trying to use accelerator yeah. more. I fall back on incubator. But
No, catch. Actually, I think incubator is more appropriate.
Okay, well, then I'll quit trying to use
yeah.
accelerator.
But it doesn't matter.
People yeah. use them interchangeably
they,
a lot. Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
They
so.
Do.
But
just,
it does confuse things. So, yeah. yes, let's focus on incubator. I'll quit writing
well,
accelerator.
Just,
so
either way,
one
fine.
Way or another.
Just
yeah.
so you know, so there really is no substantive difference in what we're talking about today.
Okay, this is true. Good point. All right, so you've got the status report from Lewis and Whitlock. First and really important thing to, I think, for us to note about this report is whatever decision we make today, the basic assessment of Collins, as Ron mentioned the ventilation issue earlier, roof issues, things of that nature, that information is needed no matter what we do with the building. The building is not desirable right now as leasable space for any use or an incubator, so whatever we decide today, we can build on that information. So I don't want anybody to think we've wasted the time or the money. We've got a lot going for us right now. So the committee, and I mentioned in here that we've gathered substantial information with Lewis and Whitlock, Ron has, but there are many unknowns, the electrical and mechanical needs of various spaces. The foundation, this was one thing we talked about, of the load capacity. You know, is there a piece of equipment that might be too heavy? We were told by Lewis and Whitlock, you could rip it out in a certain area, reinforce it, but this is remodeling a building that wasn't intended for this use. So just like your house, it may, you know, present unique challenges. Tenant separation between the labs and other spaces, things like that, are all things that have to be addressed in a different way when you're remodeling versus others.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have something in? Or
no.
Okay. And then the report identifies several issues that need to be addressed regardless of how we renovate the building. The roof and soffit, the ADA accessibility, fire sprinklers, kind of bringing it up to code. One thing I neglected to note on this is that the wet lab space whatever we do with the space, whatever we decide to do, that could be leased as a lab space, even if the rest of it was leased for just office space. Certain improvements, it would either have to be leased as is, the fume hoods are not up to code right now, or we would have to choose to put a little money into that space and lease it with a little bit of improvement. That could go either way. But to get this building ready for just a basic lease like we do in any of our other buildings, it would need these things addressed, and these are just examples. So that is one thing to keep in mind.
And just so you know, these building envelope issues that were identified, I've already got Stephanie working on getting those things taken care of, because we're not going to wait and figure out what we're going to do if we got roof leaks. And so we're going to identify what it would cost to repair the roof versus replacing the roof, which they identified in the report as an option. So just so you know, we're moving forward with all of those repairs as quick as we can.
And that's excellent, yeah.
So just to minimize any potential damage.
And that brings up a good point that, and I'm leading to those options. I know it's probably obvious where we're going here, but should we, or what one of those options is, should we decide to lease that space for just office use, it's probably, we could probably do some of that work through our relationship with Talcor, but other pieces of it would probably necessitate hiring a contractor and, you know, doing a gut remodel, that kind of thing. All right, as I moved into the cost estimate, anything else on just kind of the basics where we are right now? Okay. So the cost estimate, if you saw the numbers, this is not totally shocking, I will admit, but it was way higher than what we had hoped. But of course, we didn't know what to hope for when we started this. This is high-tech space, a lot of different requirements. We had to do the building assessment. So the L&W report has a cost estimate, it's a placeholder for equipment of $1 million. That would be the specialized equipment needed for wet lab, maker space, light manufacturing, I mean, any of those.
They just plugged it.
Yeah.
Same with the furnishings, the right. $300,000 for the furnishings.
Yeah. So there weren't, thank you, that was 1.3. Yeah, so it was about $5 million yeah. for the construction and the remodeling. The three of us, Mary Jo and Ron and I, talked through this a lot, and I think Ron talked to Sean at Lewis and Whitlock. Yes, there is some value engineering that could take place, but there's really no way that this is going to get down that much, maybe down to $4 million. That was the number.
Yeah, and one other point, if you read on page 9 of this report, where it says, please review all notes carefully.
Yes, yes. Okay. Permitting fees.
The things that's not included in this, which can be substantial, general conditions, general contractors overhead and profit, construction manager fees or professional service design fees, inspection fees, permitting fees, removal of hazardous materials, which we're pretty close to getting that done. I mean, so there's a lot that's not here. So
I have that in my notes and didn't put in the report, but yes, Ron, I was going to mention that too.
At a minimum of 20%
to that.
Yes. Right. So even if we were to value engineer, this is still kind of what we're looking at right now. And it could go up. It could go down a little, it could go back up a little.
How many square feet are those columns?
About 25,000.
And we were estimating 23.
For the incubator.
For the incubator.
2,000 is what's occupied by ag.
Yeah.
Round numbers.
Do they use that a lot, by the way, the kitchen? I was wondering.
Yeah, they do. It's just not all the time, but yes, they're there frequently.
Hmm. Okay, so page 2. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
Good. I put in 4 options. Again, I did not note the wet lab renovation, but here's where I think we are. I think Ron and I and Mary Jo, we probably agree that there are, we haven't talked again about this, but Ron and I have talked about it a few times. So right off the bat, the first two statements, quite frankly, I think you all know this, but I wanted them documented that everyone went into this with good faith, and that a high-tech accelerator in Lehrer County, and specifically Innovation Park, is supported by our mission and supports the establishment and growth of companies in our area that would have to find space elsewhere. So just kind of reminding us kind of why we started down this path several years ago. It still fits the mission, still the demand is increasing. So the first option is to accept this report, decide to move forward, spend $4 to $5 million plus equipment costs, and remodel the Collins building for our incubator. There is still a business plan to be developed, programming, other considerations, operations, and I will say, at least for me, and I think it would be fair to say, there's a further analysis of the lease of what space might produce more lease revenue in this building as it's designed, you know, as the concept is laid out by Lewis and Whitlock with a lot of tweaks by Ron and Mary Jo, kind of where we break on that revenue coming in versus the money we would put into the programming and other aspects.
The benchmark, according to NBIA, whatever they're calling it today, is 80% leasable, and basically what you're seeing in this plan is about 60% leasable. Mm-hmm. And it's in large part driven by the fact that you need a minimum amount of amenities for conference rooms and things like that, and coffee bar or whatever. And in this case, we only have roughly 25,000 square feet to work with. The typical incubator, the benchmark there, is usually greater than 30,000 and usually up to 40,000 square feet. So a bigger building with the same amount of common area space would produce more leasable space, basically, is the way the math works.
Yeah. Thank you for adding that. That's an important piece right there that I didn't include that number. Yeah, thank you. So that is our first one. I did add a note in here just to remind us that we had contemplated Collins, see the name Ron came up with, as a place to jumpstart, a first step in meeting this demand. That long term, I think many people do, that the demand will increase, particularly if we have a facility like this and we have more companies and they're building off of each other. So that is our first option here. Second option would be to update the Collins building to be leased by existing companies. New companies, but people who could pay, go ahead.
Okay. No, I'm concentrating.
Yeah, the hand. Sorry. You already have the hand, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that would include what I mentioned about the wet lab, leasing as is, or updating a few things, and then leasing that would be in this section. As I said before, they provide substantial information required for any type of renovation, so the board could enter into a new contract with Lewis and Whitlock. We piggybacked on the county contract, not piggybacked. We used their pre-approved list to select someone and entered into a contract. That is, their scope is closed, roughly, yeah, out at the end. So we would need to do a new one or a design-build contract, but that we wouldn't have a budget number. I think a contract to do the design, the architectural, should we move forward with this option. It may not be that challenging because we already have a lot of the base work done. I would hope we might be able to execute that this summer if we could, or even delegate, you know, doing that contract to Ron, you know, and so that we can move forward with that pretty quick. If we went with this option, I think it is in our interest to do it as fast as possible. We've got some momentum right now, but also we got to lease that space. I mean, we've just talks about those numbers and revenue. It's not desirable space right now. And within this, we could do a white box. So it would be updating bathroom fixtures, ADA accessibility, sprinklers, those types of things. We could white box it as one large 23,000 square foot space, or we could have a common space and two or three, four pods. There are options on the table. And marketed even during construction, perhaps, or after. So that is one potential, and I will put my two cents in as I work through here, but you probably already guessed it. I think that is far more, I mean, Ron framed it really well the other day. If we had $5 million doing, I mean, we do have, we could do the money, but if we had $5 million and we had that thought to invest in this building for the incubator, would we want to do it? Because it's kind of, it's a bit of a round peg in a square hole anyhow. This is just real straight up, you know, get it to leasable. And hopefully we can do that quickly.
Yep. What are the costs? I mean, I know the total ballpark, but to do the white box space?
Well, that's what we were just talking about. I contacted them and asked, you know, what would it cost for them to do the next step, to look at what that would look like and what it would cost. And so we would have to, we want Lewis and Whitlock to do it, which I think makes sense because they're pretty much have all the information.
Right.
But they haven't gotten back to me and told me what it would cost to add that service to the scope of their work. So,
but that would essentially, because I meant when you mentioned that, so that's essentially like all of the work. So the number they're giving you is essentially to get it to the place that you
Well, that's what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask them, first, what is their fee to tell me that number?
Right. Yes.
I see.
That's what it is,
the fee.
Dustin.
Okay, yeah. That's what I'm trying.
They need to go.
How much is it to ask you the question?
Yes.
For not
asking
the question.
For them to answer the question.
The previous. That's a good clarification. The previous contract. Well, I mean, they did the base assessment, but then we were focused on what does this look like. Not to white box it, but to do these. Those are the numbers that are in their status report. This new contract that we could get into would be building off that work, but I think I would hope we could get much more specificity from them and perhaps do it this summer, allow Ron and Ann to execute this if we chose to go that way, so that we could have that budget number as soon as possible, and really use that to solicit a contractor and set a budget number and do what we want to do with that building, start getting permittable set of drawings, after that. But yes, we have to go through that first phase.
The biggest challenge in the conversation I had yesterday is, if we do this, what's the use going to be? Because that's going to drive a lot of the decisions about the electrical, mechanical.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here going, yes. I'm not sure I understand what a white box is. So, same question.
A white box, in general, to me, tell me if I'm wrong, is something where you do everything to the drywall. So you've got your mechanical, electrical, plumbing, bathrooms, potentially common space, but people are walking into a blank slate. They do all the finishes, they do
interior walls,
they do anything like that.
Carpeting.
But we would get them, which is what Stephanie was working on, some of those components that would get us to that, quote, white box that someone else could build out. That could be all 23, well, save the wet lab. It could be majority of the space, or we could do pods. Then the next question is, what's the use? Do we see a light manufacturer still wanting to go in there? Well, that's a whole different set of questions versus office space or something.
Because you still have the slab issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's no such thing as a generic white box. You would have to contemplate the uses?
Yes.
Basically, office space is the most straightforward.
What gets complicated is when you try to mix these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you decided the whole thing is manufacturing, then it's considered by code factory industrial. But what we were trying to do is a mix of office and factory industrial, and that's where it gets complicated, Ann, because you have to divide the building, the fire barrier, and separate all the mechanical and electrical. But if it's all office, it makes it a whole lot easier. Or if it's all manufacturing, it makes it a whole lot easier. And you can, even within that context, you can do what's called accessory uses. So you can have some offices and some assembly space and some little things like that. But you're basically saying the whole thing is either a factory or it's an office.
Which one's cheaper? You did the whole thing.
Well, in this case, for example, when you look at the numbers that are included here, they had to add another 600 amp service. Mm-hmm. I mean, the electrical alone was $750,000 just to make it suitable for industrial use.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, I suspect it. So, in general, cheapest thing is white box office.
Yes.
I've never heard the term white box.
Oh, you never
really call it. I really call it shell and core. As opposed to tenant fit out. And tenant fit out is when you go in and it's like shell and core, and you get the whole skin of the roof, the building, and you have those core facilities. And then the tenant fit out is the part that puts them in there with the walls and whatever it is that they need.
So what you're talking about is taking out the interior walls and just having essentially a shell.
Well, I think there is decision point in there about bathrooms or common space.
Well,
if we
core,
want multi-tenants, that would be part of the core she's talking about.
That would be part of the core.
The fixtures, ADA accessibility, those types of things, yes. But,
and figuring out how the existing lab space fits into this idea.
And figuring that part out, and that's the one tenant separation.
Not necessarily.
But that's a little different than manufacturing.
Lab is considered business occupancy.
Yeah.
So it's not a higher level or a higher standard. Lab is considered that.
It's what we have now.
Yeah.
Actually,
so.
So it's completely compatible with an office use.
Right. So the maker space and the factory space, that really, I mean, that mixed things up, raised costs, other things. So keeping lab space, adding some offices that people use that lab space. And there could be multiple tenants in that lab space. We could choose to go in that direction, too. So that's kind of a hybrid here of looking to lease the rest as office space or, you know, just more general use and then enhancing the lab space with some offices and other things, so maybe three tenants could use that, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, I think I like the concept, especially with what you just said, that with the demands that we have for lab space, for whether second stage or the call I got the other day, which is for an existing company that was looking for lab space in the park.
Whether it's dry or wet or
right,
something in between.
You could have shell space for that and say, we're going to allow you to put that in this building. And I'd love to
the
see more of that
occupancy.
With office occupancy and not have to get into the
lifecycle
manufacturing requirements. Yeah. I think that probably makes the most sense with at the least expense. And then because one of the other questions that you raised, which has to do with the whole ADA thing, and that is, if you do this shell, do you structure it such that you keep the common areas and common restrooms, or you just make, you know, individual entry points and let them do their, you know, have it stubbed for restrooms, but let them do their own restrooms in each
shell. Just think about buildings like this. It's usually in a common facility.
Yeah.
It makes it, they have to meet certain fixture counts by code, and it's just easier to do that in one location. It's cheaper, it's easier to do it in one location. And when you get into individual tenant fit outs, then they have to provide both men and women's, which is two single haulers instead of just one.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few exceptions to that.
But again, the other thing you run into is, do people want separate exterior access? You know, they want their own space with their own, you know, name on their door. And then when you have this common area, you have to provide ways to access the common areas, which reduces your leasable square footage. This way, if you put the restrooms in their space, they're paying for it. You know, there are some trade-offs. These are things we'd have to talk about in design, but I just want you to know that those are some of the things that we're going to have to deal with when we go after costs, is how do you want to structure this box?
And it gets back to your question, too, about, you know, paying for tenant improvements. Does the park pay for tenant improvements, or do the tenants pay for tenant improvements?
And I think the obviously, ideally, the tenant would pay.
Yeah.
But I think at some point there will be some incentives that we may need to pay for. So.
And how do we envision paying for these kind of things? I mean, do we go get a loan? It's bonded. What's the process for that?
That's really not a question.
Yeah. Well, this is go ahead.
Well, if we're going to create lease space, I mean, we can get lease revenue bonds basically to fund these things.
And they're very low interest bonds because of our.
Now, if we're going to go to, they're not tax exempt if we're going to lease to private entities.
Okay.
So it'll be whatever the tax were. The streets are still pretty low.
So the concept here is to shell out of the building, then look for one, maybe more major companies who will have the money to actually fit it out according to their plan. You would have maybe a 10-year lease, something like that, some long-term lease so that they're locked into it with some kind of a you know, deposit or something in case they go bankrupt sooner than they might otherwise plan. Is that sort of it?
You may get a we may get a company that wants a long-term, a 10-year lease. That's a substantial commitment. I don't know. I think all those details are what we're going to have to work out. To me, and taking this back a step to other things we've talked about today, I almost said before, remember Ron's answer when we get to the next item, because lease revenue is where we're going to build things. I think the structure of the leases, other things like that, and the potential desirability of this building. I wonder if a potential tenant looking at it who sees they have to spend money and build their own bathroom versus the bathrooms are done and the kitchen is done in common, it may be more cost on our side, but I think that's part of what we have. I mean, your conversation with the broker or others, that would be really interesting to me to see what is more marketable in that. So I think those are questions we have to ask while we look at the cost and maybe several options from Lewis and Whitlock while we're looking at these two things. Yeah. To your point about the funding and stuff, though, I think this is the breaking point, at least that we've been anticipating for a long time. And I guess really what I'm suggesting today is, this is the point where we have to decide, we in a holding pattern or we're going to invest. I mean, that's kind of harsh, but that's what I look at this as. We have old buildings that were not maintained well. They were not established for a really interesting, innovative park.
It wasn't a great era anyway.
It wasn't a great era for construction. We have cleaned up a tremendous amount at this park and gotten us almost in the black next year and everything. But this is the break point. I think we have to make some choices about now spending some money to get future revenue. And how we do that and collecting more information, that's exactly the question I was asking earlier about, you know, kind of weighing the qualitative impact of this versus the quantitative, the dollar amount.
So can I just ask stupid questions here? The park was built in the 70s. All of the buildings were paid for with bonds at that point. We do not now have debt.
Correct.
On any of the buildings. So we go
we
into
have 3 million in savings.
Four million.
Sorry.
Four million in savings.
Yeah, 4 million.
But we've paid for the buildings that we currently have. Even if they're not maintained,
yeah.
We still own the land and the.
We lease the land.
Yeah,
we own the buildings.
Well, we lease the land, or we have moved it into FSU or FAMU's master plan. Now.
Right.
At first,
right.
We lease the land.
The buildings that we own, yes,
yeah.
We lease the land.
Okay.
We lease a quarter of the.
Yeah. Well, so but with regard to the building we're talking about, yeah. Lease land, own building,
yes.
No debt.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, arguably, to sort of interrupt, I think the buildings revert to the state at the end of the 99-year.
Yeah, 2074, yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless something else happens.
Yeah.
Then,
something
yeah. So, one thing I guess just to remember is that the way everything was structured a while back, the two huge problems stand out. One, FSU prepaid their leases for all the buildings. We put it in the bank and we operate, or not we, Innovation Park Board and staff of the past operated without any additional investment. So they were just drawing off that savings to keep those buildings going and on prepaid payments from FSU. And so there wasn't any long-term planning here or anything. The other piece of this is, and don't want to digress too far here, but most research parks that were established post-Research Triangle. Everybody said, hey, I want that. Mm-hmm. They started off, my understanding, my research has been very similar to us. Build a few buildings, they'll come. That's not necessarily what happens. I've referenced Madison, Wisconsin, their research park in the past. They started off like we did, but retooled in the early 80s. Built a spec building, incubating companies, lease a couple floors. Those companies graduate, they need another building, develop clusters. That's how they started. So it was a marriage of programs and leasable space and trying to attract those. We never did that. Most of our tenants were public sector. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And at the same time, we've had this discussion in FSU has discussed, how do we go out and attract the R&D components of larger companies to come here, right? I mean, that's something Gary's talking about.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
Where do we put them?
Well, no. Does a prototypical company exist? What does it look like that fits into this model of this open shell type of thing? Because I've seen it in the past where a company who's getting going, it's a major investment, need a bunch of space, need it quick, they'll do things like lease a warehouse, and they will, you know, over a 6 month, 8 month period of time, they'll renovate it, turn it into labs, office, whatever they need, with a long-term lease, deposit and so forth, and they raise the money to pay for the tenant improvements. And of course, it's in your building, you own it ultimately. So there's a lot of risk on their part. That would be ideal, that type of a scenario, if such a company exists.
So, and just sort of, again, kind of big picture here, so we have buildings that we know have deferred maintenance costs associated with them. We have the desire to move forward with some innovative space for innovative businesses. Could you theoretically package that debt together so that you could deal with a lot of this deferred maintenance, and I know we still have a plan, you know, we're still waiting the report, but is that possible so that you're packaging up new construction and debt in a bond?
I don't know if we could combine the two. I mean,
actually, I think
they're like an umbrella bond for
the improvements.
Like, you know, it's a $25 million bond issue, and it builds a building, and it
especially if we have existing long-term leases, like we.
Right.
The term of lease is a challenge. With, for example, the National Park Service, you know, they had an original term was 5-year firm plus another 5-year option. Mm-hmm. So I think when you get into lease revenue bonds, I think that's the big challenge. If it's not a long enough term, at least to match the term of the note, then you can run into issues.
You can just go to a bank and get a loan, too. You can do a commercial loan through it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But why would you if you can do bonds at very, you know...
Frankly, last one we did was a private placement with a bank, so with Wells Fargo. So
okay.
Well, I think it's
kind of looks exactly the same, but
I think it's a very interesting idea.
I got one more step of this. Yeah, I got one more part of this.
Yep.
But that piece on Collins, you think it is the sense that we should at least explore these options this summer?
My sense from Collins, or do you need to tell the rest of the story?
I can tell the rest of the story. I was just kind of gut checking if this is feeling like an interesting area to explore instead of $4-6 million on the incubator. Now, that need still exists. I'm going to get to that piece in a second, but I just wanted to pause.
For my money, from what I have heard, I'm harkening back to the first study that talked about how whatever we did needed to be flexible because we didn't know what we were aiming for, which really goes to your question also. I still don't think we know what we're aiming for. I don't think that is necessarily a killer. I don't think you're ever going to know exactly what you're aiming for because this is all moving so quickly. So I like the idea of having something that does things we have to do anyway, maintenance, provides the maximum amount of flexibility. My gut is do the internal stuff that Mary Jo talked about. Go ahead, put in a little common area, put in some bathrooms, even though arguably maybe that's not as flexible, but it gets you people faster, potentially. That's a detail. To me, it sounds like the right size project for us. That's just my gut for now.
Okay, not seeing anything else.
I was going to say, is the thinking that you're going to go through the other two options and then we're going
to,
or?
That's what I was about to say. I was going to say, hold on to this for a second, because this can be the only direction we choose to go, or I just wanted to kind of gut check that real quick. I do think there's some parallel things going on here, that if should we move forward with this, we need to talk to OED about recruitment efforts and targeted recruitment and other things, and that gets to the point about R&D, a branch of a company, Danfoss, others, things like that, not Danfoss, but other companies like that that may want to move into this space, and having some flexibility there. So I think this needs to be targeted not just towards an assessment of the building and kind of marketing options, but also work with OEB over the, should we move forward in this in the next few months just to see how we would market this, see where the cluster mapping is going. We know a lot of that from FSU already and FAM. So the second piece of this there's still this need for the incubator. There is still demand. To your point, we don't exactly know what that demand is. We've seen a lot of it. We have companies in other areas, so we are taking a risk designing an incubating space without having leases in place, but all evidence, all research points towards people want to be not just in Leon County at the park, and the demand for the space exists. So if not the incubator in Collins, then what are our other options? This is still, as I said right off the bat, fits the mission of the park. We can choose not to go forward. All those, the desire, the demand, everything else is there. There are no other public or private sector organizations, to my knowledge, looking to do this. I mean, the universities are for university people, but no one on for companies that are in the commercialization phase that are trying to move forward. So, an alternative or addition. Do Collins the way we just described, investigate that more, would be to look at a multi-story building. Could be 10 million. This is a substantial chunk. But the thinking would be, and what I've got listed here, is that a multi-story building that looked at those uses, light manufacturing, clean manufacturing, lab space, innovation lab, as it's noted on your Lewis and Whitlock, the makerspace. Again, FAMU was interested in partnering that. We've done all the different assessment. That creating a new building that had a incubator, say, on one floor, we would have flexibility on the size, the tenant separation that Mary just talked about, the weight requirements on the floor, all these types of things would be, I don't want to say it would be substantial savings, but we're not retrofitting an old building. So we're building it right off the bat, and there's got to be some, value in that. The envelope of the building, other aspects, mechanical foundation, things like that, those costs could be shared between, say, 2-3 floors of leasable space for similar companies. Maybe there's a light manufacturing, maybe there's office space. We could look at those options. So a standalone building, we still have the program costs. I mean, we would own potentially one floor of this building. But as Ron said, that 80%, 60%, leasable space, much easier to hit that target or more. Common space could be occupied by existing businesses, recruited or moving out to the park, and those that are startups or second, that might be very attractive to those program participants and to the other companies who are working with those other folks. One thing I did note on here, could be an opportunity to build something closer to a future multi-use building or housing or whatever we do on the 11 acres, so it kind of draws people up to this side of the park. EDA grants, we've been talking to our regional rep. He's waiting to hear after this meeting today. I mean, he wants to talk to us about putting in an application with the EDA.
I talked to him this morning.
There you go. Yes, he knew June 1 was.
So I called him because I wanted to find out. I wanted to let him know what we had learned about the cost, mm-hmm. and kind of see what their maximum paying threshold is. And he said, really, the upper limit's about $2.2 million for construction of something like this. But they match 50%. But he said that would be an extreme case for them to go as high as 2.2. He said more likely they're in the 1 to 1.5 range as far as what they're willing to do on a project this size. He said you can carve out areas and say, okay, I'm building a larger building that I got lease space in, the incubator's this much, and they'll still match on the incubator portion. So that's just kind of where we're at. But he understands what we found out and appreciates that we did the work on that to make sure. But the other thing he said is that for this fiscal year, they are fully appropriated. So there are no more funds available for this fiscal year. So we're looking at 2018 to get any kind of appropriation. So there's no like big rush. You got to get some application in to get it this year. But what's their October 1, right?
October 1 is that, yeah.
This is EDA.
Yes.
If we get a budget or continuing resolution or all programs are cut. So I will digress for a second. So some of you heard this before, but at 115, 120, I'm leaving here to go over to Research A. Because Congressman Dunn's office reached out to me last week to do a business roundtable and tour today. I'm on the Appalachian Regional Council Board. They have a connection with the Economic Development Administration as well. This is one of the key topics, and I have 10 minutes with the congressman before the roundtable starts. There was limited space, so the invitation was not extended to everyone. One of our top tech grant winner, it will be at the table. As will officers and Ron, and this is one of the key areas that I want to suggest to him in my one-on-one, and I'm sure it'll come up in the other, that EDA grants that are completely eliminated in the president's budget actually do a substantial amount of good in our region, in the rural counties and in Leon County, and actually we could use more of that investment, not less, because most of the investment has gone to other areas of the state or the country, larger. So that's something I'm bringing up right now. That's really where the budget question comes in for Greg. I doubt that the program is going to be severely cut like the president suggests, because so many, particularly rural counties, rely on EDA programs. So with that, I will be bringing that up.
Good.
In 25 minutes. So the other thing about your conversation with Greg that you reminded me is that if EDA funds a space, there are substantial long-term requirements to maintain that space for the intended purpose. So we would likely want, should we apply or be awarded $1 million, $1.5 million for a space like that, we would want to dedicate it to the incubator space to ensure maximum flexibility on the remainder of the space. But that's easy to separate that, and we would have to maintain ownership, things like that, but we would intend to do that anyhow. So as Ron said, yes, there's a little bit of time for EDA grants, others. Bringing this to the end, the fourth one on here is just do the white box or shell and core and leave the incubator aside, not continue with that. I will conclude here and say my gut on this is that it is a huge number. This board has not done this type of investment in 25 years, and it's time. We've done the hard work to get us here, and it's time to explore those options. And to me, it is the only way to create an environment where a company may come in, lease a piece of property, and build a building like Danfoss did. Or others. It enhances those recruitment efforts as well.
What's your gut?
Yeah, which one are you saying?
My gut is doing both of these.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, that was an important part. I think we need to not have the incubator at Collins. I don't think that's workable for us at all. I think we need to move forward this summer. We can do it relatively quick with the information we've already gathered, establish a new contract. This is my suggestion for a motion on Collins. Allow Ron to establish a new contract with Lewis and Whitlock.
Or amend the existing contract.
Or amend the existing contract to come back to us with options, have discussions with OEV about recruitment, have discussions about the marketing, and bring back whatever we've got at the next board meeting, may or may not be complete, but try to move forward with that space as soon as possible. Secondly, I think somewhat longer term, but 6 months to a year, really dig deep on assessing, and we already have a huge start on this other building, but assessing the lease revenue, the business plan, the marketing. We can build on everything we've got so far, and kind of look at the per square footage, and because it's new construction, examples from other communities may be more helpful than they were on Collins, because we may have more similar models. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that help?
Detailed question. So the second thing, moving forward with a separate incubator, build a building, hopefully with an EDA grant, when do you know if you have one of those? So we know that the money for this time, I'm trying to figure out.
When we have a plan and we know what the cost is, then we can submit the application.
Mm-hmm. And
it's on a rolling basis.
Yes, it is on a rolling basis.
Yes.
Yeah, so I forget, we had this discussion. It's pretty quick. It's I think it's like 60 days.
But obviously you're not going to submit an application when there's no money in the pot, and we don't know if there's going to be any money.
Well, that's part of what we've got to get to, is we've got to know the cost. We've got to figure out how we're going to finance it, whatever piece we don't.
No, I mean, no money in the EDA pot. Didn't we say money was all used up?
Yes. Yeah, so here, just
is there a cycle?
Is what I'm getting. It's just the annual cycle, and we're coming in towards the end of the fiscal year, only 3 months left, so they've doled out all that money. Okay. So you do want to submit it probably in the first few months of the fiscal year, should they get appropriation, so you're in that pipeline, because they've moved to the rolling basis. What I would suggest, best case scenario, might be 6 months to gather a lot of information, to think about other funding, to think about who and how much we'd market the other floors to, and that business plan, things like that, kind of putting some of these various pieces together. Am I on the right track? Mm-hmm. And then
6 to 9, yeah.
Yeah, 6 to 9, yeah. So in the fall or early 18, come back and be able to make a decision. We need all of that information to apply for an EDA grant, but that is one piece in a larger puzzle here. And looking at that long-term cost about the lease revenue, paying for the construction and the shared cost of the envelope and some of those larger pieces that serve the leasable space and others, all that could be fleshed out.
Now clearly, a brand new building is the best solution. There's no question. But if it's going to be $10 million, probably a little more.
Could be.
What are the options for getting that money? I mean, you mentioned brainstorming about that, but are there viable alternatives for a piece of money here, there, and otherwise that could get you where you need to be?
So we have often referenced the 12% of the economic development money that's going to Blueprint, and I will say from here and for years to come, that's not much money every year, and there's a lot of desires. So I think about that as potential for programming or EEP or something else at this point. There could be other requests, but I think that's the more desirable. What I mentioned earlier about packaging together a legislative request, this is what was on my mind, is saying we need an accelerator and support some programming dollars and some construction dollars married with these others. There are times when private companies like Florida Blue and others will have invested in incubators around the state. We can start soliciting interest in that as well. And then, of course, the anchor tenants. That's an option, too. You know, having commitments. We need a lot more meat on the bone before we probably, you know, get people to commit to that. Does that help?
Yeah, I think, you know, even though all the conversation is good, ultimately, I think what we're being asked to decide is, can Ron move forward with getting the answer to the question of how much it's going to cost to get potentially renovate Collins? And do we feel comfortable with assessing the feasibility of building a new building? And on those grounds, I think I'm in support of both. I think both are great opportunities. A whole lot of work has gone into even getting us to this point. And I don't know that we're sort of putting the cart before the horse just by saying, what pots of money are available? How do we finance it? What does it look like? All of that stuff. Because I agree, that could be very attractive from a legislative standpoint. That's much more of a shiny thing that people can fight for versus, you know, something else, right? So I'm in full support of this, and I think the conversation will be an exciting one. Again, even if we determine, I don't know, a smaller building, or so. I mean, I think there's a lot to be decided on, but based on those two things, I think we've done too much work to get to this point and then not say, at least figure it out, the feasibility.
Well, just a side note to all of this is, we've been very public about the plan to build, to do this jumpstart incubator. Okay? Very public. And I have no problem saying we did our due diligence and determined this is not the right way to go. But just keep in mind, there's a huge expectation out there from everyone, from Steve Evans to a guy I talked to yesterday who's trying to start a business here, that they know about this thing. And so we've got a communications issue we're going to have to deal with and be prepared for, that says, you guys said you were going to do this, and now you're not. So even though, you know, we're doing all the right steps, I'm just telling you, we're going to have to craft a message around that.
Well, let me ask something that, to my mind, fits in there a little bit. It sounds like there could be timing issues with the doing the Collins thing, doing the other thing, if we're trying to package them.
You mean package them for a funding request? Separate.
Okay.
Collins would be on us. That's what I would assume.
Yeah.
Completely. And we can move forward with that, you know, relatively quickly, far more quickly than the other, because we would be funding it ourselves. The building's already there, it's remodeling, we've already done a lot of the labor.
Well, where I'm trying to get to is, if there is potentially some way to spin, hate to use the word, or consider what we're doing as a species of incubator. I mean, this is among ourselves in terms of what we're talking about doing physically with the building. That doesn't have to determine whether it is potentially usable in some way as an incubator, whether it's through grants to people who, okay, need the space, well, here's a little grant and you could build out this part of it, or I'm just thinking. That this is still...
That it's sort of, it could be a baby step towards a full-blown incubator.
Yeah. It's not a jump start, it's a hard.
Right.
It's a hard. You couldn't help it.
I think the hop is taken.
That's probably true. Actually, circling back to what Ron... Yeah. If we went into this intending for the wet lab space to be accessible by a few different tenants, enhance that space, I think there is a public perception desire, but we have a real core desire to provide this too. So there's no conflict here.
Right.
So if we went into this next phase as saying, we're going to meet this part, but the costs are high, so this is going to be better as a new building. We're not starting from zero. We've done a tremendous amount of work, but we're moving forward as quickly as possible and get as much of this documented before the next board meeting. I think that really helps. And just a little side note on the public, Tom Flanagan has been interested for a while about a conversation about what we're having here. Thought maybe this summer, it could be early fall after the next board meeting. I mean, we have some opportunities there, a lot of interest to tell the story too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yep.
Okay.
So would it be possible that as the architects group is looking at the Collins build out, that they could have, you know, one option would be that it's a hop, you know, and here's what that might look like, and then here's, you know, here's the other piece, and then the third. I mean, could they do that as an inner? I think that would
be. I understand what you're saying. I think that's.
Even though I'm not real clear.
No, I understand.
Thank you.
Basically, one is, you know, keeping the labs and some of the infrastructure around it, upgrading, doing the other.
Wow, we are.
And then we can say, yes, but we're ready to go ahead and start leasing labs to those folks that need it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do we need to authorize Ron any direction, give direction, I guess, toward going on and modifying this program? And
I think the direction is to get a cost from Lewis and Whitlock to amend or do a new contract, authorize Ron, and depending on the cost, Ron and to execute that.
Within the purchasing policy.
Within the purchasing policy.
Because it is not a budgeted amount.
Right. And we could, I don't know if we need to, I mean, if we needed to do anything extra to feed Zach or someone could move forward more quickly, but any way we can move forward more quickly, yes, I think. Getting that started, and then I think starting to assess how we would gather information on the new building.
So we need to make that a directive or a motion?
It has to be a motion because we're talking about a budget amount.
Yeah.
So moved.
Second. Okay.
Let you be the second.
No, you both, yeah.
All right,
good.
We've got a motion and a second. Further discussion? And Ron, is that clear enough to give you the direction
I think
that you need?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes.
We can.
Yeah. And then if I have questions about cost on other steps along the way, I'll get back with the chair and we'll figure out how we're going to move forward with that.
Peggy, is it clear enough to be in the minutes? Okay.
And we are trying to have an executive committee meeting towards the end of this month, so if we need to address any more.
Well, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
And if I could just add one note, this brings me to an issue that I have in that I have been on the board almost a year and I've never been outside of this room in the park. So I don't know the buildings, I don't know what they look like inside, no idea of the status of them. And I would love if we could have a meeting in one of the other buildings, you know, I think do a tour of the buildings. There's nothing that would preclude us from being able to do that. And I think it would be very helpful as we look towards the future, because unlike Kristen, I have not been, you know, knee-deep in this stuff.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
Okay. I think it's a good point. I think individuals have done different things, but we've got enough new members. Yeah. Madam Chair,
I understand.
Yes.
I'll see you over there on the coach.
Thanks.
Yes.
And so you said you'll walk in the room regardless of what time I get there?
Yeah, 1:20, and you'll see how it's set up. Thank you all. This is not set backwards. We're making progress.
Yes.
Thank you for all.
Yeah. Thank you for all your work, Kristen.
It is a hiccup, though. Yeah. It's 6 feet the way you go.
Yeah. This is true. Progress has been more money.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Let's see where we are.
We're just about there.
I've already given my report.
Yeah.
Staff reports.
Staff reports. Yep. Yes.
I will make mine very short and sweet. The tech grant lasted, one on May 17th, so we finished that. We raised $6,500 in sponsorships, which was very helpful in making everything go smoothly as possible. So thank you for everyone who helped with all that. The event actually sold out, and towards the end I was turning away people. I think I turned away about 8 people. So we ended up having about 100 attendees overall. We had great feedback for the event. The biggest comment we had was trying to stream it in the future. So we're arguing about that to see if we should.
Discussing.
Yes. Yes. Just because it would be really hard, especially with only 3 people there to do it, and then we also have other things with people not wanting to show up to attend if they can just watch it at home. So we're figuring that out, so we'll see what happens next year.
You might get somebody like WFSU who would be interested in doing that, or the city of Tallahassee.
Yeah.
I mean, they have video
staff. Could do it as like... Yeah.
And you don't have to even tell people. Like, you don't have to market it. You just do it. And then, everyone who didn't come, people see it.
Right, they can see it.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Is there a consideration for having a larger space then and increasing the population, the attendees?
We probably could. I'm not sure if we're going to be there just yet next year.
We looked at another space.
We did. We looked at the Turnbull Convention Center. And I mean, that does have additional space there. But another thing that we'd have to take into account is the number of catering with attendees and everything as well. So we would need to raise quite a bit more additional money in order to be able to accommodate more people.
Because we do not charge admission, right. So every, you know, the growth is on us, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you should.
Or on the sponsorship, or a couple of sponsors.
Yeah.
Don't rule out Mission San Luis space over there.
Mission San Luis? Okay, I'll look at that for next year, too.
And do we rule out anything out here? Just too hard?
It's not big enough.
Nothing.
Any other places?
Enough.
Yeah. Nothing. There was one in Foundation Building B, but yeah. I think that's
we'll look at for gap. We'll look at
So besides that, I did create a lot of materials that we can reuse in the future as well, including a banner, yard signs, meet presenter posters, and everything. So those things can be used on a multiple year basis. So. That was really great. Now we have banners for everything.
She's really added a very professional look to where we used to have stuff we'd print off the copier and tape together.
So. Even the programs were done by Target, and we had to. They looked so much better than in the previous years. And the only other thing that I'd like to report is with the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program, we already have several signups for the October class. So, and it's June, so I'm looking forward to that. I think we're going to have a really good class this year, too.
Great.
And that's pretty much it.
Okay. How many in that class plus cap?
12 companies is what we usually put the cap at.
12?
Yes.
Which is usually 24 people.
Yes.
For my report, just real quick, I want to report that we did lease an additional office space down here for New Energy. They're now up to 322 square feet. It's great. The fact that he's grown, he just doubled in size, so it's good. I met with a hazardous materials company. I think I may have told you this last time. We just executed contracts, and by the end of July, we'll have all the hazardous material out of the Collins building. So that's a good thing.
Schedule the tour for after that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And they certify clean at the end?
No, they just take it. They're just taking stuff.
You don't have the liability.
If it isn't there, it's clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as they're not doing a phase one environmental study or anything like that. They're just taking materials away.
Just removal.
Yeah. And disposal. So that's good. It's off our hands.
Sure.
I just want to remind you that we are trying to develop a slate of officers for the next board meeting, because that's the August meeting, right? And then the meeting after that is when those officers would actually start. They could begin to attend executive committee meetings and sort of get up to speed, so we would encourage that. I've had a couple of conversations, but I'm going to have some more conversations. Remembering that the intent of the board was that we would get the private sector folks involved in being officers. So I will start making phone calls, and we will get something put together, hopefully, by the next board meeting.
So, meaning the slate has to be there by August?
Typically, we do that by August. So, you know, it's not something that people really want to come to a meeting and be nominated without knowing in advance what's going to happen. So I try to have the conversations with all of the folks that are interested and kind of inform them on what the responsibilities and duties are, time commitments, things like that, so they're ready to jump in.
Yeah, and I would just say a lot of these people aren't here right now. Obviously, yeah. Showing up is a big part of what's required. But otherwise, I would say don't be shy. You know, coming into this knowing everything is just not likely. It's just not likely. But if you're willing, it'll be okay.
Think 3-year term.
3-year term for chair, is that what you're saying?
Well, I said think that.
Okay.
Is there anything that precludes the officers from serving multiple terms?
That was a look of panic.
No, the biggest challenge we face right now is trying to get a rotation going, because the way the 4-year terms overlap, you basically have an opportunity to serve for two to three years in office. And if one group does not do that, then the rotations don't work. Right. And you end up with somebody who has to serve 3 or 4 years. I think Kristen served 3. And that's just not fair to those folks that, that are doing that. So that's why when we brought the board in, the new group in, like with you, I think we had a very serious conversation about the expectation is that you'll serve as an officer at some point during those 4 years.
The other thing is, how long has Kristen been on the board?
Long time.
Long time, Dave?
The same time.
Long time.
Yeah.
So, in my mind, it's not just this rotation thing that that we're talking about, which is a great idea, but to actually build up, some expertise. Yep. People
absolutely.
Who could be officers, rotate off, still yes. maybe do another term, but right. Not be in the barrel the whole time, so that you've got some depth.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, you mentioned a critical thing, though, and that's attendance. You did.
Yep.
Somebody did.
Yeah.
And we really have to have board members committed to attendance.
It's hard, and we all know it's hard. We all have. This isn't part of our job for a number of us. So.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get moving because we're gonna get over that other thing. But yeah, I'll be calling.
Okay.
Soon.
Good.
Not you, but everyone else. I think you meant pretty clear. The I'll be serving as a panelist for TCC's Entrepreneurs Forum coming up in a couple weeks. Excited about that. Project Campus, we don't have a final determination on that yet, just so you know. Can't tell you anything more than that, but we just don't have a final determination yet. We should know a little more in the next couple of weeks. We're in the middle of doing the auditor RFP. We're supposed to have our responses on Monday, and then we have committee meetings set up to, audit committee meetings set up to review those responses. I've had 5 companies express an interest, so we'll probably have to have both meetings, one to sort of whittle it down to 3 to present, and then the other one to actually rank the finalists.
Excited.
And that is pretty much it. Oh, and we had to get 2 new computers for staff because one just refuses to start up. And
takes an hour.
Yeah, so eventually it gets there. But anyway, so we had to do an emergency purchase of a couple of computers. We actually found a pretty good deal, under $1,000.
Do you have them yet?
They actually just came today.
Okay. Can you give us a real quick what you saw in Nashville and what you can bring back? Real quick.
I always enjoy going to those things, even if they don't necessarily translate, one for one with Tallahassee. You always get some ideas. The cool part was we got to go to visit an incubator and then this other thing called the Wondery, which is a Vanderbilt sort of creative space, not really an incubator. But you could at least see what kind of resources they had, what they were thinking, how they partnered, because there was partnerships between the 2 facilities on, for example, what they call their pre-fly program, which is, I think, kind of like our EEP program. So one of them does the program, and they send their folks, to those. Both of them share that program. So things like that. It was a worthwhile trip. I got a number of good things out of it. I got to see, architecturally how they design some of their spaces. And, because they have one of the Wondery actually has their innovation lab, one for the 3D printers and one for electronics. They didn't have the wood shop and the metal shop, and frankly, I wasn't all that impressed with the 3D printing shop, but at least got to see how some of that worked. But they were working on university money. I asked them how much it cost, they wouldn't tell me. So
Vanderbilt's got some serious
money. So they've got, they got a foundation or something that's got tons
their
of
endowment
money.
Is
endowment,
large.
Yes. So, so I got to see.
Any one thing you saw there that this community needs to emulate?
I mean, not directly, other than the what they're working on. And unfortunately, I didn't get to go to the last session, which is where they wrapped all this up because I was busy trying to fly back here and make it to the elevator pitch night. But I'm sure a lot of that was discussed. But I think the big thing is the branding of the community. And if we're gonna try to attract people to come to this community, we need to know who we are and how to sell it. And they
Nashville has a great brand, and they all came together and agreed this is the brand of our community, and they sell it. It's an easy thing to talk about.
In the 50s, Grand Ole Opry people went to the city and said, we will put up on each of the major roads in the 4 interstate coming into town a sign welcoming Nashville, Music City, USA. And the city commission said, we don't want to call country music. We'll leave that out.
Yeah. And it's not country music.
I don't know.
And that's what
also mixed USA.
Yeah, they took USA out of it. Yeah. So.
There's going
to be a lot more future conversation about that trip, and I think hopefully there's some steps to utilize.
And will there be some community?
The chamber's leading that charge.
Okay.
Anything from our property manager before we sign off?
Big things, soft washing buildings, mid-month, trees have been trimmed, working on getting some color annuals around the signs, Innovation Park signs, and in the People Center, and things like that. That's all going to be happening in the next couple weeks.
Sounds great. Anything else? Anybody? Thank you all for your attendance.